So I'm going to say welcome to week four, and we've started our recording, and this will be in the area for the membership area for week four. But what I wanted to begin with at the beginning of this week is I kind of wanted to take a little bit of a pause from some of the just giving you the content. Now there's going to be a lot of tying some of the elements together today that I hope will even further clarify what we've been going over and give you, you know, some greater clarity and therefore ways to move forward. But before jumping into that, I wanted to look a little bit from the point of view of what we are doing here. And part of what we are doing here really is empowering you as a force for change. As a leader, now, okay, maybe not having all of the titles and the ranks and the pay scales and the whatever else that might go along with what a lot of people think as a leader, but looking at the reality of leadership in our lives and in the world, most of the real substantial change doesn't happen because people are asked to take the lead and step up and do something. Most of the significant change historically takes place because people get in there and begin to make a difference. I know that this kind of area became of much more interest to me personally when I first started. Actually, it was when I first got into the area of history and philosophy of science way back in the day, back in the last century. That sounds like a long time ago. In some ways it was. But the fascinating thing to me about, as I looked at the history and philosophy of science, because what that really was doing was looking at the history of ideas. And so it looked at some of the, you know, the revolutionary changes in science and how that impacted our world. Now, those revolutionary changes were quite literally turned the world upside down. So from the religious view of the world, which had the earth as the center of the solar system, so to speak, you know, came along Copernicus and the like, who said, no, the sun is the center of the solar system. It literally turned the world, as people knew it back in the Middle Ages, on its head. Totally upside down. Did anybody say, Copernicus, you need to go out there and change the way we think about the world? No. He just, however it happened, he woke up one day and he said, this, everything I'm looking at through my little telescopy thing doesn't make sense unless the sun is the center. He started to see patterns that made it look different. And once he had seen that difference, it didn't matter how dramatic an impact it was going to have on his life, and it ended up having a pretty dramatic effect on his life. I think he was burned at the stake or something like that, pretty horrible. But he could not get it out of his head that the world was not the way everybody else was looking at it. And so that was part of his whole thing. Not because... And how much has the world changed because of that understanding? Massively, massively, massively. So this, some of the most significant change never comes from the center of the status quo. The most significant changes, you know, and then going on into history and philosophy of science, and a lot of that was, you know, Karl Popper and Thomas Kuhn and all of those kinds of folks. But the thing there that stuck with me and has stuck with me ever since, and then I've seen that pattern everywhere I've gone, that the most significant change does not come from the center of the norm. It comes from the periphery. And that's why people like Margaret Mead say, what is it that Margaret Mead said? She said, I don't want to butcher her comment. I'm really bad at quoting people and telling jokes and things like that. So I'm going to go back and try to find what she actually said more precisely. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. So part of what that means is that we don't have to wait until we have a huge, huge group of people to make the difference. When we have a small group that are really focused, that are really centered on, and have something in hand, that, like Copernicus, could radically change the thinking of people. That can make the biggest difference. Now, we don't have to, you know, turn the world on its head and say, okay, no, the Earth is no longer the center of the universe. The sun is the center of the solar system. And then, you know, further research into space has made us understand that it's not just the sun's not the center of the universe. That's just one solar system in a galaxy. And there are just billions of galaxies. So our mindset has changed radically, but I tell you, the biggest difference was that switch, that initial switch that Copernicus initiated way back when. So here, I just want to really reinforce that a lot of what we are doing here is to really look at and have you to really think about yourselves, maybe not as the center of the universe, but yes, the center of your little cosmos of change, you as the leader, not because you have the title. Maybe you do have the title, and that's wonderful if you do, because that adds things that you can do. But nevertheless, to always, and sometimes people with the titles, even when we, you, I have a title, sometimes we don't act from a position of leadership. We continue to think of ourselves as either victims of circumstances where we can't really control everything, and maybe we can't control everything. But to understand, really deeply understand our role as a leader and what it is that we can do and are responsible for. And this is what I want to dig into a little bit this morning before we launch back into all of the structures and the systems and get feedback from what you did as homework, whether you got around to it this week. I want to give you this next week with a little added layer to do more of the same, because this is such an important area of digging into your stakeholder drivers and understanding that realm. But I do want to, again, underscore that what we are really doing here is strengthening, empowering, reaffirming, encouraging you as a potent source of change. You are a leader. I cannot lead your life. Only you can do that. There is only one you. You are absolutely that leader of your life. And what you can do, I can never do. No matter, even if I was the greatest person on the face of the earth, I could never do what you can do. I can perhaps impact you. I can perhaps influence some of your thinking. I can perhaps do a number of things, but I can never be you. I can never do what you and only you can do. I can never touch the lives that you can. You are so important. And that's why I want to take a little bit of time to look at the difference here. One of the biggest challenges for heart-centered leaders, for those who reach out into the world, can see the need for change, and who are willing to get out there and make a difference. One of the biggest challenges that we have is understanding boundaries. And so I want to put it into the context this week. And some of you may have heard this approach before, maybe not, but it's worthwhile revisiting this either way. And I want to bring to your attention the difference between being responsible to others, being responsible for. Responsibility to and responsibility for. Now, when we're parents or when we're responsible for young, you know, little helpless creatures that our kids can be, or sometimes people are, that's one thing. And that's a responsibility for, but most of our lives, we're responsible for our lives and we are responsible to others. Now, how do we differentiate responsibility in two and four? And this actually came, this piece was brought home to my, you know, this clarification, which was really helpful, came to me from actually a lifelong, you know, not quite lifelong, but a long-term friend of mine, and lady who has done years of work in as a chaplain. First as a hospital chaplain, and then as a hospice chaplain. And now she works helping people deal with loss, grief, and transitioning in their life beyond that loss and grief. But even there, and this was, and she tells me time and again, actually, there are times when I have to remind her for her own life about this particular point. So we often are not, we can advise others very easily, but we often need others to reflect that back to us for our own lives. So I am not saying this as the queen of responsibility two and four, because I need to remind myself at times, because there are blurry areas where our heart tends to blur the responsibilities of two and four. But part of the problem of people who continually take responsibility for what is not theirs to be responsible for, they often end up burned out and get resentful. Actually get resentful. So a lot of people in the helping professions, often because this area can so easily get blurred, often do get burned out, get compassion fatigue, end up saying, hey, you know, I give up, it's useless, and get cynical, and then lose something of themselves that is actually profoundly powerful. So it takes great wisdom to know where your responsibilities with your parents, your children, your partners, your coworkers, your beneficiaries, and your friends end, and where theirs begin. But just as a simple reminder, we can put it into a framework such as, if I'm responsible for someone's behavior, for example, for my son's or my daughter's behavior, I'll try to control them to do what is right. If I'm responsible to my child or my friend or something, but, you know, again, the lines often get blurred with our kids many times because we so deeply care about them and we so deeply want them to have a good life. We so desperately care about those that we work with. We love them. We can't bear to see them suffer. But if I'm responsible to my son, for example, or my daughter, for his behavior, then I will advise, I will counsel, I will set up a framework for them. I'll provide them everything that they need to optimally then for them, him, her, choose that way forward themselves. I can give them the best circumstances for them to choose. But in the end, I have to ultimately respect their dignity as a person and allow them to make their choices. I just still remember when my daughter, I think, was about 13, I cannot remember exactly the conversation we were having, but the thing that struck me at the time was, Mom, I just want you to know I've had a mind for a whole lot longer than you think I've had one. And that was more about in the context of understanding and making decisions. And I think she was kind of saying to me, Mom, I've been doing stuff for a whole lot longer than you know. And what that did, and luckily at that time it wasn't dramatically problematic, but her main point now was, at that time was just, Mom, you know, I make decisions and I do stuff. In other words, I have agency. I'm a human being. I make decisions. And so I think it was kind of from that moment on that I realized, yes, I'm her mother. Yes, I'm the mother of her two older brothers as well. But it's for me now to have a different relationship with them and to be the one who would advise, counsel. And even at any time when we realize there's even more at stake than just simply, yeah, I'm choosing my friends, Mom, type of an issue, that even when circumstances are dire, acknowledging that the other person is making the choices for that life, that is what, in a sense, we have to respect as their dignity and trust that in their world and their perspective, they are doing the best that they can from what they know. So what we need to do then is to help them either educate them, help them see it more differently, create a different environment that allows them to choose differently. But unless we are prepared to control another person's life, and where's honoring and respecting the dignity in that, we are therefore responsible for creating those optimal conditions for them to make the best choices. But in the end, we acknowledging that we do not live their life and we don't want others living our lives. And we will reject that by and large. I don't know when the last time somebody tried to make you do something that you didn't want to do. I don't know whether you remember how much you embraced that idea, but it's very human not to. This is how we are, and this is part of what we understand. But the point here is, and I really want you to think about this and to consider this, that you are responsible to others, but not for them. And what that can do is that can also allow you to say, yes, I have done what I could do at the moment, and now it is up to them. You are allowed to give them space to make their own choices. And you don't have to feel like you failed because somebody else makes a choice that you think might not be best for them in that moment. And sometimes we have to remember that, when we look at other people's lives, we actually don't know all about their life. And there can be very, very good reasons why people act what appears to be abysmally in the moment. And later on, we find out, oh, now I understand. If I was in that situation, I too might have done exactly the same thing. So part of being a leader is to also care for your own life, to give yourself those boundaries. And this feeds into the being willing to say no sometimes. And this comes in the organizational level when you understand your real X factor and saying, no, that's outside of the scope of my organization. Even at that level, there's responsibility to and for. Your organization will not be able to, alone, will not be able to save the whole darn world as much as any of us would like that to be the case. However, that does not mean that it cannot make a profound impact on the lives of those who choose to work with you, either as stakeholders, beneficiaries, whatever. So a lot of this is about boundaries and just awareness and making sure that you allow yourself to step back when necessary and to not be self-recriminating about that, but to simply accept that this is something I cannot do. This is up to them. another way of looking at yourself, I just wanted to bring in a fourth century Chinese philosopher that I've liked for years. And it's just a very pleasant way of looking at, I think, what you as a leader and your how you work. And it's sometimes it can be almost secretly, not that you're trying to be keep things quiet or anything like that. But he said, look at this window. You know, look at a window in your house. You know, it's nothing but a hole in the wall. But because of it, the whole room is full of light. Being full of light, it becomes an influence in which others are secretly transformed. When people walk into that room, their life is different because of that window. And it's done quietly. You know, we don't think about the light that's coming in the window. But you as a leader, as that light that you're bringing into people's lives, can profoundly transform people's lives. And just because it's a secret does not decrease the impact that is being made and how that then ripples out and makes a difference in the world. So I just wanted to, in a sense, pause to take, you know, this moment just to think about what we're doing here. And so much of what we're doing here is looking at you as a leader. And I want to ensure that you know how important you are, how profound a difference you can make, even when it is not sung across, you know, it doesn't stream across nations and throughout the world in any neon lights. But the difference that is being made is important. And so what you do by bringing that light into the room, into people's lives, you do that especially as you provide people new insights. You help them shift their thinking about things. You help them see themselves differently. And again, just because it's all but unspoken, many aspects of leadership are all but unspoken, it doesn't mean it's any the less transformative. And so as you go out there and really help other people see what they are doing differently, feel that they are important and that they make a difference, not only in their own lives, but in the lives of others, then you are providing them with a profound, that's the empowerment that you are bringing and the change that you are also bringing into people's lives. And then when you, through your project, your program, your organization, you can help magnify that and systematize some of those elements of change, then that's when you start to make an even more massive difference, and you can then multiply the difference, the one-on-one difference that you can make for others. So before we get into some of the other stuff, I wanted to, this week, I know I had given you the homework was to focus on one stakeholder group and to choose and to try to do a few interviews using the 10 question stakeholder drivers discovery sheet. Now I can also drop that sheet into the chat for me, so you can get it easy access and just download that. I'll get it to you not right this instant, but I will get it into the chat soon. I wanted to ask if anybody had a chance to do even one or two interviews, and I'd love to hear from you what your experience was.
Well, good afternoon, Karen. I had an opportunity to do one with my selected stakeholder group. Yet to get to the other ones. It was very insightful, you know, getting to see their reaction and also their answers to the questions kind of opened a whole lot of other windows and doors that we will be exploring, mm-hmm. you know, very soon to understanding their strength and how they fit into the organization and also what they know about the mission, the objective, and the culture of the organization. So it was very insightful. It really was.
Did you also find that did you get the sense that it was also valuable for them to have that?
Yes, I did, because most of them were able to understand through the conversation what the organization was about and what was also expected of them, and it brought them closer to the organization, feeling being part of what is going on. So, in fact, it took them to another dimension where they felt empowered to share. One of the things I, at the end, where I asked them, okay, some of the challenges that they faced. And they were able to speak up different people with different views. And at the end, we were able to narrow it down, and it just boils down to the technology, the tools. So mm-hmm. we're walking around on how we can walk around that. And, you know, we can't solve the whole problem, but at least come to, you know, a middle. And another thing that it got for them to know that what you just said, that we don't have to wait to have a large group of people to make a difference. So that resonated with us that particular day, knowing that we don't have to wait for everybody. You know, it's the key thing is commitment, mm-hmm. you know, personal sacrifice to the cause, and not so much as keep everything on the hold while you're waiting for those who are lollygagging, who are just dragging their feet, and then the ones who've really caught up, you know. Not that those other people are not important, they are, but they might not be important. They might not be good fit for what is happening now.
Right.
These ones are pretty much hungry and want to get to know and understand what was happening. So it was valuable for them as much as it was for me. You know, I was able to see different strengths that I would be able to tap mm-hmm. into.
And that was just one mm-hmm. entity, right?
That's one entity, yeah. That's a volunteer group. So this week I'm looking forward to talking to, because we are also trying to set up a board. Mm-hmm. So that has been something I've been playing around through the, you know, the past weeks. And maybe we'll have an opportunity to ask you some questions when it comes to that, because there are different views on who should be and who should not be. So, you know, trying to look at the right mix, you know, either setting up an advisory board first before mm-hmm. we get into the main board to see how the advisory board will work.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I think that whole just engaging in that process is such a... It allows you to enter into a whole new level of, almost a whole new level of engagement with people that is not so easy to do without making some kind of effort like that. And so I'm glad you had such a rich experience just from one. And then you'll discover as you have, as you interview more of that same stakeholder group, then you'll begin to see the patterns and that of that group, and then you begin to see how your organization can line up, you know, what it is that you can do. You start to see those threads and those themes that are unique to your organization, and this kind of then connects with what we were talking about last week, and I'll revisit this a little bit later on in today's class too, about the X factor. And because you begin to see where it is that your unique elements, you know, begin to line up with those people, with that stakeholder group. So anyway, I'm glad even just from one interview, you had that rich experience. Thank you, Afanye. So I know, Funmi, you didn't manage to get to that yet. Grace, did you have a chance to speak with anybody?
Yeah, I did one-on-one interviews with my stakeholder group was the interns and peers. I've scheduled another one, but so far I've interviewed 4 mm-hmm. of them. Yeah, it's been interesting. I did get the sense that there was some confusion over one of the questions, the Imagineering question. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting even for me to be like, to handle that, because like, yeah, it's also telling for me about like an area that we need to work on. It's not necessarily like.
That's right. Exactly.
So that was interesting to just kind of, it reinforced something that I already knew, I guess.
Right.
Like clarifying the mission. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was interesting to get their perspectives. I think I got kind of like a varied group in terms of some had more to say than others.
That's not, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think it also, like, because we don't have, like, that many interns at the same time, so it was nice to connect to some of the former interns and volunteers, because one of the things that we do try and do is, like what the idea is that, like, once you're part of Women's Federation, you're always, like, right. Welcome, and you're always... you know, you're part of the family now, kind of thing. So it was just nice to have that as a way to do that reconnection.
Very good. So was there any, did you find that it was interesting from the point of view, you found it was interesting because it began to point out some of your own challenges, and that's part of the value of doing any kind of assessment is as we begin, even we think we're assessing other people sometimes, but a lot of the time, you know, we can't help but think about how that impacts us as well, and which is important to do. But did you find that it took you to a slightly deeper level of discussion with people, or that was just?
I think it depended on the person. Like there were some that like, you know, took maybe 20 minutes, 30 minutes. Others, it was over an hour. Mm. Just like, cause they had a lot to say.
Yeah.
A lot of like, I think this is just like also, it's normal of like young people, I think, to not want to be critical of like the provider of a service, but right. More just self-critical. So definitely, like, I think there are points where I needed to kind of steer it back to like, so like what mm-hmm. what can we do?
Right.
Yeah, and I think I got a few things from it. I'm still like trying to, I don't think a pattern is really developing yet.
Usually the patterns will start to emerge a little bit more around 7, mm-hmm. 7 to 10. I mean, the more you can do, the definitely more clear the patterns become, you know, mm-hmm. And if you had 20 people to do it with, I would encourage you to do it with 20 people. But if you're really, really serious about clarifying patterns about things and getting that kind of certainty in what you're doing, then yeah, at least 7, you know, that's, yeah, I mean, of course, statistically, you know, 7 is still not a very good group, but yeah. But you will begin to see patterns emerging at least around 7 and getting very much more clear around 20.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, because right now I'm getting like conflicting things, like so.
Yeah, right. And so even there, part of what you can discover there is if there are very conflicting things, but there is something that both of those parties have. If there's a sweet spot in there that both parties have, and that you feel your organization can provide, then you know you've got some solid gold.
Mm. Mm.
Okay. So you're always looking for, you know, people don't have to totally agree with everything, because since when does that happen? But when there are core issues or core, you know, like common, you hear certain things being said again and again and again and again, then you know that that's a common challenge. And so then, and if it's something that you can help people address, then that's really, you know, that's your area. That's one of your areas. That's really an area. If it's a common concern, but that is not what you can address, you know, that's again, not your X factor. It's just not your X factor. Don't try to do it. Mm-hmm. Acknowledge that that's a significant concern and issue that's out there. But if it's not what your organization can pay attention to at this time without completely retooling itself, then that's not, no matter how big an issue that is and how common and to everybody it is, then you don't. So you need to keep looking for, if you're not prepared to move what your organization's doing, then you're going to have to keep researching to find what it is, you know, that your organization can do. Or maybe you have to start rethinking what it is your organization's doing. You know, so you've got your choices, but at least as you begin to do this exploratory, you know, kind of analytical piece, you're at least getting clarity about what you're doing and where you're going to go. And then you can be confident about the choices. If you make a decision based on this, then you can be more confident, you know, and then you know you're not just saying, well, I thought I'd just try something different this week. You know, and how well does then you'll just try something different the next week, because you know it's not grounded in certainty. So again, I would encourage you, especially in terms of your stakeholders, and when you get onto, you know, and Afanya is talking about board members, and I know that's not your area of work, particularly Grace, but I know it's the concerns of others, you know. But these are the kinds of things that would need to be done at those levels, and really would be informative for everybody, board members and organizational leaders alike, to do this kind of exploratory work. Otherwise, we're just hanging around and trying to get things done without really grounding it in reality. And human beings have reality. We are diverse. We are complex. We are all kinds of things. But also, it's people that we're working with. That's social change is about human beings. And so unless we ground it in some levels of reality as to who we are as people, then we're playing with ideas. And ideas are nice, fantastic. I love ideas. But that comes back to, let me just jump in really quick. I'm going to jump a little bit ahead here and share. I'm going to share this with you. Just because it kind of, hold on, and so it's kind of, this is kind of going back to, what we were doing last week. But this time I'm adding a little bit, not just giving you lots of words, I'm adding a little bit of a diagram for you to help. Hold on, I just have to go back into this. that this exceptional model that I'm giving you, I've called it my exceptional model, and part of that is I've got reasons for that, including, as Kunmi knows, I've got this kind of podcast and TV interview little endeavor on the side, and I've ended up calling it exceptional TV, but it works with so many other reasons, and I'm not going to go into all those details. That's just fun stuff for me. But the exceptional model is really built on a framework of principles. And the TQ framework, you probably have never heard of the TQ framework. If any of you have ever read my book on United Nations Unlocked, you might understand something about the Transilience framework. But it's helping people understand the dynamics of change, and not just at at the personal level, absolutely, and at the institutional level, because you've got to integrate those two. When we're talking about social change, you've got to deal with the human element, and you've got to deal with the way we function in our society through our organizational change. So this exceptional model is built on the principles of change. And I'm not going to go into all of those details here. That takes too long. You know, we could do a whole, you know, semester on that. and that's not what we're here to do. But just so that you know that this is built on pretty solid stuff. And what we're doing here, and I've got here the aligned or tag system that I go into next week, but I've got kind of three systems, organizational systems. So last week we went over the X factor, the organizational core, kind of the identity, the core of who your organization is, the core of your work, or the essential change that you're working on within your team, your organization, your initiative, your project, whatever it might be. And the more clear you are about these things, then the more you can speak exactly and precisely and powerfully, and the more you can communicate to others. And even as you're doing the kinds of research that we were just talking about, then you can be more clear about how to either work with the people who you are, these stakeholders. Clarity is kind of useful in our lives. And then, of course, the other system that we need to have in place are our resources, and we went over that a couple of lessons ago, and I talked about that in terms of how we understand a really good social change program or social enterprise or a nonprofit, whichever name, and people use all kinds of names. But whatever the endeavor is, it's not just... The resources are not just financial, and the resources, and you know, it's not just money. So, but funds are an essential part. But it's important to include in your resource engine, so to speak, people resources, social capital, meaning, you know, the kind of trust that you build up in your partnership with other organizations and in your community. How much do people turn to you when they either need something, want something, or because you are the go-to person or organization for that area, for the area that they're needing assistance with or wanting advice on or wanting to work with somebody on. So having a resource engine, you know, that includes things like social capital and not just money capital, and how we work with them and how integrated that is. And that's all, those three systems across there are the main systems to put into your social change model. Organizational model. And then it's on the top of that, you know, it's kind of on the top of that, on the foundation of all of that, then you have your people that you work with, the culture, it's the leadership style, it's the mindset, it's how your teams come together, how you work with your stakeholders. But this is kind of you, this is the exceptional model for your organization that I help, I am providing with you as a way to see what it is that you're doing as a social change leader. And when you're creating an organization, this is the kind of house, so to speak, that you're forming. So founded on principles, we have systems, and then we develop, you know, and all of these things are happening at the same time. It's not like we wait until we get the principles clear. No, not at all. The concept is that everything is all integrated with all of this. And so that's why it's not as simple as saying, okay, well, do this first, then do that, then do the next thing, then the next thing. As much as you start doing this, then you begin, you take this other step, and you realize then it connects to the previous step, as well as creates the foundation for the future. And then you start in, you know, doing the next step, building on that, and it pays, you know, and it has implications for all of these areas. So anyway, that was just, I just wanted to provide you that kind of visual of what it is that we're doing here. We are putting some systems in place. And next week we get into the real, and I call it the alignment system, because it helps align a lot of these things that we needed to talk about and begin to clarify, begin to see ways that we can even have better insights into working with our stakeholders, because they all kind of feedback around again. They're all, we don't start in one place and not do anything until that's finished and then start on the next step. It's not as simple a process as that. It's not quite like climbing a ladder, and when you leave the first step, you're on the second step. As much as we're including pieces into our system, and we're working to integrate them all, and making a beautiful, maybe making a good recipe, making a good cake, maybe. And maybe we've got to put the icing on the top later on, but I'm going to say that you guys are the icing on the top. But anyway, so there is that little understanding of the structure, the model of an organization, so to speak, that we're working on. And again, what I would like, as we now, does anybody have any questions before we continue to move forward into this week? What I'm going to do this week is really dig in a little bit more into the stakeholder drivers. And I'm going to give you a new sheet that you can then begin to work with as you do your interviews, as you begin to see patterns emerge. Then you can use this sheet to begin to have even a visual, and again, none of this is etched in stone, but a visual of the stakeholder journey. So, I'm going to work on toward getting that next sheet of paper into your hands, so that you can then see how that, with the assessment sheet and this stakeholder journey sheet, so to speak, then you've got a way to develop a clear plan for your different stakeholders, and that you're not just working with them, but you're really digging into understanding what's going on inside, below the surface. You know, what are the currents that are driving them? And therefore, what do you have to take into consideration as you're working with them? If you are very clear about the goals, your objectives of a specific project that you have in hand, for example. Any particular questions at this stage, or just continue on? Any questions? Clear enough? Clear enough. Good. Okay. So let me get this up again. So again, I think I mentioned last week, the management makes a system work. It helps you know what you know how to do, and leadership builds systems or transforms the old ones. So again, that's what we're doing. We're helping to create systems and giving you the resources for those systems. So I'm not just here saying, hey, you should go build a system. I'm trying to put in your hands the things that help you actually build at least piece of this system. In 6 weeks, we're not going to build your whole organizational structure that aligns absolutely everything perfectly so that you walk away from 6 weeks with a perfected organization. But you have tools, resources, and understanding that you are building a system that is really focused. And this is what, you know, the kind of system that we're looking at is the using this exceptional model so that, again, ideally, you really are focused around something that is core, essential, and that is needed in the world. Sometimes what we think is needed isn't always actually what is needed. So sometimes we have to adjust our thinking. So that, again, these are the tools that I'm helping you to provide so that you can, sometimes it's just a slight tweak or adjustment in your thinking about something and your articulation of something. It's not a massive change, throw everything out and start all over again. But sometimes it's just a matter of re-clarifying and getting it clear. But again, the model that we're looking at is it draws on principles of change, principles of social change, and that are transformative and that allow people and their organizations to be resilient. Because I have to say that there was one massive lesson I learned a number of years ago. And that is the danger of organizations that are not learning organizations and are not adaptive themselves. If they are not adaptive, that is if your organizational structure doesn't allow for evolutionary change, it's a little bit like the current UN structure is not efficient for working in the 21st century in a time where technology is moving everything faster than what it was in 1945, 70, 75 years ago when the UN was formed, and what it was formed for was to primarily prevent war. It wasn't formed to facilitate global engagement the way the world is working and needing now. And the UN is becoming increasingly, dare I say, irrelevant. It's not going to be completely irrelevant. It's not going to never be needed. Its organizational resources are going to be needed, but as a leading organization in our world, it's questionable. Why I wrote my book, why I caught the attention of the UN CIO, why she brought me online onto the UN to help envision the way the tech leaders can help the UN re-envision itself. And why that didn't go very far? because it's not, even when the individuals within the organization want that to happen, it's currently still structured in a way that disallows the kinds of changes that are needed. And much lesser organizations with much lesser goals can be structured the wrong way. They can be structured as unlearning, hierarchical, mature organizations that cannot adapt to the day and the change. And I kind of liken that to when an organization like that, when the people outgrow that kind of an organization, it's like a snake outgrowing its skin. It has to shed. It has to shed something. Something has to go because times change, people change. The way the world works changes. And either you build adaptability into your institution or your leadership allows that to happen sometime down the road. Because mature hierarchical organizations absolutely can change and become adaptive. They can. John Cotter is one of those who's shown exactly how that can be done. And it's not an easy process. It's not a simple process, but absolutely it can. And why does it need to happen? Because otherwise, how many large companies that even you know? Now I can list a whole litany of companies that have gone by the wayside because they didn't adapt and change. Just because an organization has great aspirations or good goals does not mean they're immune to the failures of bad structure. So it's really important to build into your organization, build them on the foundation of principles of resiliency, human resiliency. What makes humans adaptable and change, able to change through the ages, through incredible difficulties and dire circumstances and still rise up and become something better? Unless we build on those kinds of principles, and we're not, again, even as I referring back to what I was talking about this morning, our responsibility to and not for, where we're responsible to people, but we're not going to try to control the people. And that kind of resiliency is built into your organization. It's so critical. I cannot underscore how important that is, because otherwise it becomes apparent too late, and by that time the cost is enormous. The cost is enormous to individuals, the cost is enormous to the organization, the cost is enormous to the world. What could have been will never be when the organization is structured poorly. And the exceptional model, reviewing that again, if you remember back to lesson two, we went over disciplined people. And when I say disciplined people, that's aligned. People who, I would like to say that it's not just a matter of having clarity of thought, but it's an alignment. It's an alignment with your core purpose. It's an alignment with your systems and your processes, your inner processes. So it's your alignment of people, of thought, and of action. And because of that integratedness, it's not just a matter of saying, do this, do this, do this, do this. You've got to kind of pull all of these pieces together. It's like a purse saying, you throw the net and then you pull it all together with that purse string, so to speak. And then it all comes together very powerfully. So that alignment is what we are working toward next week, once we've got a number of these, the understanding and the pieces in place. And then to simply understand that it really is, that should be another A, if I can put another A in there, tag two A's, one A, it's adaptive and agile or just A, because there's lots of A's, who knows. But it's a system that is iterative. It is essentially very, very simple, but when it's put into place and you work with it, it's very, very powerful. And so we get to that next week. And then, the leader's mindset, adaptive, iterative, you own it, but you have this responsibility to, you have a responsibility to other people, but when the leader of the organization, you are responsible for the organization, for the structure, you're responsible to the people. but you're responsible for the systems that you set up. If you set up your organization as an unlearning organization, for example, and then years down the road, things begin to fall apart, that was what you as the leader were meant to be responsible for, so that you could be responsible to your stakeholders appropriately. But in an organization, you are responsible for the kind of organization that you are responsible for. And this gets into, and we'll go into this maybe a little bit more next week, but some of the characteristics of a resilient leader. And one of those key characteristics is having a healthy relationship with control. We all like to have dependable outcomes. But as we were kind of talking about this morning in the whole concept of two and four, in there somewhere, this is another way of saying we have to have a healthy relationship with control. We can't just control other people's lives. We can't just make people do things, but we can set up systems and structures that allow and enable and facilitate and leverage. But part of the leader's responsibility, or part of what makes you a resilient person also, is this relationship with this, with control, and understanding this concept of responsibility to and for. So there is that. And then I went on to looking at this and just reminding myself, this kind of a model of what we are doing here is intended as, again, as we talked about in back in week two, that it's not just enough to have a good organization, but the assumption is that you're working to create something that is great, that is exceptional, that is unusual, that is highly focused, that can be the go-to, that can really be exceptional. Okay, I think I've said that enough. And I guess the difference there is, I don't know whether you've gotten this from any of the any other things that I've said before, but I kind of like, I'm pretty impressed with the Tesla car, right? Anybody else know the Tesla car? 0 to 60 in 2.3 seconds, Model S. I mean, I've never been that fast. I've been in a Tesla, but I don't own a Tesla. And would I love to own one? Yes, I would love to own one. But 0 to 60 in 2.3, that's almost like sitting on the top of a rocket. But, I would like you to be thinking about creating the Tesla kind of organization, not a Model T. Model Ts are cute, but they're uncomfortable to ride. They don't have good air conditioning. And you certainly can't go from 0 to 60 in 2.3 seconds. So here the assumption is you want to focus on something that is solid, that is strong, that is good, which is also why we went over this last week, the X factor, and why I urge you to keep thinking about this. This is not something that, again, that you plug in the numbers and the data, but this is something that you will work with. You will wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and think about, God, what am I really doing here? What is my sweet spot? How can I do that? As you interview your stakeholders, as you interview your beneficiaries, and I would encourage you to take the time over the next week, month, 6 months, that your plan in the course of a year, that you would take the time to at least once a year, either you have work with your teams to spend time with your different stakeholders and re-interviewing them. Okay, so the questions that are in that document, you don't have to use them literally each time, because you the objective of the information that you are seeking will shift and change. So you adjust that document according to your needs. But that gives you a template to work with. It gives you a framework for your interview. You can drop off a bunch of those questions, not all of them, but some of them may become irrelevant for some of your stakeholders. Some of them may be, you know, even secondary, but I would encourage you to think about how each of those questions could be utilized or adapted, A, to the stakeholder group, and B, to, you know, rediscovering what they, you know, your beneficiaries in a year's time, because the world will have moved on. We'll have some slightly different insights, concerns, focus, fears, challenges in front of them. And to stay connected and engaged, really engaged, and not just feeling like you are engaged, I would encourage you, each one of you, to take time to interview and spend, even if it's only just a few people, but to do that kind of, have that kind of engagement with some of your stakeholders, but plan, for example, if you've got a team that works with the beneficiaries, then they should at least once a year interview upcoming beneficiaries and past beneficiaries about what they learned, what they valued, what they would recommend to you going forward, but use that framework. Don't just think that once you've done it, it's done, because, you know, even what's important to you this year and what you think is important for your leadership skill development this year will be different than it is next year. Even you will have changed. So never assume that that kind of discovery with your stakeholders is passé. It's not. This is part of, you know, you don't get tired of breathing. Okay? It's good to do every few seconds. And maybe you don't have to do it every few seconds, but I would encourage you to do it every year. And so again, this, where did that go? I guess the color got lost. Maybe. There we go. Came back. You didn't see that because I jumped out of the screen. So what we have been doing is looking at the X factor, the stakeholder drivers, and then next week we get into the tag system, that we're integrating all of these so that you have that that whole piece, that house, that home, but it's a green home driven by the solar system, driven by solar panels. Who knows, still one of my dreams. But anyway, but nevertheless, the point is you need integrated systems. Your Tesla needs an integrated system. Your house needs an integrated system. Any kind of a motor car or anything, the systems have got to be integrated. They've got to work together. And so that takes that time to pull them together. So, and this is the people and culture side, the human element, THE, the human element, how we as human beings live, and maybe during our 3-day intensive, we'll get into that. Go into a little bit more in depth into the TQ framework, the transformative change leadership. Our journey and stakeholder journey, and you as a leader. This is all of the pieces that we're looking at. And as we look at the stakeholder journey, which is where the document that we're getting to, and mapping out that this ties back to, remember when I first talked to you in the first week to remind you that, and I think remind, maybe it was even introduce the idea that your stakeholders go through a journey. And that this is often, so often overlooked, that this is just how we as human beings live and learn. We have this journey. We sometimes in the beginning, our awareness, sometimes we don't even know that we've got a problem. sometimes part of our journey is to understand that we do have a problem. Some of us start fully aware of a problem or in some aspects of our life. Then we move on to understanding that there just could be solutions to those problems, that there might be something that we can do. And then it's to either through research, through discovery, through whatever it is, we discover what options there are. And then we can even uncover that out there, somebody might have already put some things together. There's a way that we can pick up on what others, we could call that offer, we can call it shoulder, you know, somebody else's shoulders to stand on, whatever it is. And then there's the level where we jump into having that experience of it, where we are experiencing it. And remembering that our various stakeholders, our beneficiaries, our board members, our staff, our peers go through all of these things. We join an organization, we don't know how the organization works. Or you start an organization, you don't know how to run an organization. You're learning. So, and then you come across a problem. And then you realize, oh, there's got to be a solution. Oh, let me look around and find out what it is. Oh, there's this one looks pretty good. That seems like a pretty good offering that's out there. And oh, yes, now you decide, you take that on and you have some experience with it. But there's always this journey. We are always going through this. And it's not just us. It's everybody that we work with. And as we're doing this, understanding that, you know, as we come to this level of experience here, part of what we do, you know, and this is almost another way of saying that same kind of thing, but it's slightly different, but it's another way of saying it, is there are stages of competence. And, you know, whether it be as an organizational leader. And so understanding that we're going through these processes is important to know this, so that we can help our own people go through that, which is why we're looking at getting to the point where later on we have a stakeholder journey map, so that we can help them move on along from, we either find out where they are on this journey, and then we know what we need to take them to next. We know exactly what we need to do next to move them along that process. If we're just assuming that everybody knows, have you ever, I'm going to open it up and ask each one of you, if you've had any experience where you've assumed somebody knew something, but in fact they didn't, and what it took for you to come to that realization or recognition. Anybody remember an experience where that happened, and then you had an aha moment and you realized, oh my God, they just don't know. Anybody like to share a story of that? No, I got a bunch of shy people. Okay, you sure nobody wants to share? Something right in front of them, then you didn't realize? I know I've had some pretty profound experiences there where the world I was looking at was so different than what other people were looking at, and then realizing how different it was, my world to theirs. It can be quite stunning at times. But and that's the point, as in terms of your responsibility as a leader, it's for you to know that it's your responsibility to move your beneficiaries along this path, for you to move your board members along this path. How many people may have a board member who has connections? Maybe they've got a lot of experience and expertise in an area that you think is valuable for your organization, and they've never been a board member before. Right there, it's part of your responsibility to help them understand what it means to be a good or exceptional board member, because they just don't know. Is it their fault? No, nobody's fault, but it's your responsibility to notice and then to make it possible for them to move along that path to along that path from not even knowing perhaps that they've got a problem, that they don't know how to be a board member. And so you've got to think of ways to educate your board members. And every board is not the same. So there's no set of videos out there that you can probably just go and plug your board members into and say, watch these, because we want you to know how to be the best Women's Federation board member or the best board member for Ifanye in Lagos. I mean, sorry, Ifanye in Ohio, who's working with people in Lagos, or wherever you're working with people, or Funmi working with your board members. So the thing is, that's your responsibility, and knowing that you have that for all of your key stakeholders. And then understanding that your stakeholders, even the ones who you do not control per se, or work with on a weekly basis, and they could be stakeholders like in Grace's instance, the UN, which that's a big thing. That's not a helpful way to speak. It might be the ambassador of Nigeria that you want to work with, but they're a stakeholder in maybe you've got a project that's taking place in Nigeria, and you want to communicate to the Nigerian ambassador. It's one thing to have his email address, his fax address, and to have a good, you know, template for a letter and a way and a process for following up and working with them. But you also need to understand, well, how much do they know about Women's Federation? How much are they interested in that kind of work? Do I know enough about him and where he is, about who he or she, might actually be a she at the moment, in New York, and the ambassador in Vienna is different to the one in Geneva, who they are, whether they're supportive of nonprofits, whether they know your nonprofit, whether that's a top priority for their member state at the moment, whether that particular ambassador is totally aligned with the capital, or whether they feel like they have a little bit of play, they can move and do things, you know, how much can they move and shift and change things within their realm of responsibility, because that varies from mission to mission, ambassador to ambassador, whatever else. So understanding that you need to address this element and bring them along a pass, you need to find out where they are so that you can be effective in working with them is really critical. And not having this mindset and awareness and then a few simple tools to work with can really limit your ability to be to make the kind of impact that you want. So, and talking about the UN, that's not necessarily the first level of impact that Funmi and Ifanye want to make, but it might be something that you're wanting to begin to tap into, to begin to get to know about. I don't know. So right there, I would encourage Funmi and Ifanye and Grace to talk together sometime about what you all do, just to share knowledge, and we'll actually create that space during our 3-day program, our 3-day implementation intensive. But that's part of what is fun about it. We create the space for people to work together, and even if it's just sharing knowledge and information, which can be the basis for action. It can be really quite exciting. So, but anyway, so understanding all of these things were very critical, and having some experience with the stakeholder drivers. And again, maybe I hopefully can get into what the part of the TQ framework in those 3 days, just some little snippets as to understand why it's so important to understand the drivers and why this is such a powerful piece to add into that I don't think you'll find taught or revealed anywhere else. Versions of it, you know, in terms of marketing concepts, I pull the whole thing together and let you understand that, which is really helpful as you go forward. Once you looked at it this way, it's a little bit like Copernicus. Some things you can't unsee. But I think that it's really helpful as you go forward, especially when you're dealing with social change leadership. So that brings us pretty much to where this week I want you to start and play around with the stakeholder journey map. A lot of this, I've put a lot of words, you can download it, you can look at it, you can read up about it. But I think even without the words on this paper, I think the main point is that you understand that you are here helping people to take the journey, your structure, your organization, your project planning, the events you have, the ways you communicate to your people. All of these things, are built upon this kind of common underpinning understanding of what your work is as a change leader and bringing people along on the journey with you. So this week's homework, and then I'm going to jump into something, give you time for any questions that we've got. And then I'm going to jump into one final little bit of information as we start to think about the 3-day implementation summit that's coming up, which is now only a couple of weeks away. But what I would, the homework for this week is, in a way, it's consistent with what you've been doing now. I hope you're starting to feel like, yeah, I'm starting to get a sense of this now. And from here on in, what's really important is that you have experience with it. You test it out. You continue to do some of your interviews. You find those patterns. And then you can begin to see how this plays out in having a stakeholder journey map. So you'll continue your driver assessment interviews, understanding the things that really are driving your stakeholders. Again, focused on, it's easier just to start with one group in the beginning and to focus your, and to do that group as a whole, to see the patterns of that group as a whole. And then to start and to consolidate that information that you gather into your one page stakeholder journey. And then I think one of the things that you can do is to talk with some of your colleagues about this, work to explain some of what you're doing to them, because that also helps you understand what you're doing, and see what that brings up in discussions about your organization's X factor. Because a lot of this X factor stuff is not something that just, you know, it switches on. Again, it comes through dialogue, through discussion, through understanding, through having this engagement with people on your team and people in your organization. And then the other thing, and that leads into the next part, which we'll get to after any questions, which is to start and to clear your schedule for the 3-day implementation summit. And the possibility of inviting some of your colleagues and your peers to participate in that. And I can explain how in a moment how that can be done. But I'd like to just open it up now to ask, are there any questions about the homework? Any questions about anything I've said? Any comments that you've got, any reflections on any of the anything that we've gone over in this today. Just unmute yourself and take it away. No questions, no comments.
Well, just a quick comment regarding the stakeholder thing. I found that I think it's something that we can use continuously for even in regular interviews because it's pretty much cool just to use that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So not just for the assignment or for the homework, even in everyday life, getting to use that as a conversation starter, you know, a segue to discussions on how to transform things and getting to know how people view different things also. It's not just for that purpose, but also for different purposes. So I really do find it interesting. It's something that I want to understudy and also incorporate using to not just deal with stakeholders, but also people that I come in contact with on a regular basis. So,
yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to want to make
some of these questions are some of the ones that I use when I interview people, when I, you know, even just, yeah, in ordinary everyday conversation. It can be interesting. It's more just saying, hi, how are you? All everything good? How often is everything good?
I guess I have a question. I don't know if you have an answer. But you were mentioning how, you know, there's organizations that have an unlearning habit or an, you know, like you're talking about the United Nations. And I was just wondering if you also have like examples of organizations that you think currently do it rather well, implement kind of what you've been talking about rather well. I understand like it's always unique to the organization. It's going to be unique. But, and it's not going to be perfect ever, but just if there's any that come to mind that you've come across.
Yeah, I think a lot of the ones that are the ones, if I was to talk about a sector that is more likely to use some of the agile adaptive stuff, it tends to be the smaller, younger startup organizations. It's harder to do when you get bigger. However, increasingly organizations do. So aspects of, you know, part of the work that part of the elements that we will be going over next week actually helped Google turn into the big organization that it did very quickly in it. And so it works in a big organization as well. Some of these methodologies are just now being adapted into Apple, which is a massive organization. But systematizing some of these practices, it is possible even at the biggest level. When we get into next week's lesson, which is a, you know, kind of a whole another change of pace, I think you'll begin to see how interesting that concept is of alignment throughout the organization, which means that even if you're big or you're small, when you align things well, you can remain adaptive and agile in ways that allow the organization to be innovative and yet provide consistent, responsible, you know, still have its standards and procedures. Because, you know, just like as an example, I would want the Tesla factory to have total control about minimal, you know, exact millimeter, micron levels of tolerance of the equipment. You don't want that to change. You want that to stay. But you want somewhere in something, some part of that organization to be innovating and coming up with new things and new ideas and whatever. Just not in that place. And so you've got to have your systems. You've got to have your reliable, part of the reason why you create a system is to be able to replicate and to scale things. And so I don't know whether that answers your question exactly. I don't want to give you examples of organizations that are problematic, other than, you know, some of the ones that are obviously problematic and that couldn't change are like Borders Books. Has anybody heard recently of Borders Books? Okay. What was it? We used to go to the video store to get video.
Blockbuster.
You know, where did they go? You know, I mean, all sorts of stuff are just, you know, they grew up overnight and then they disappeared because they couldn't adapt and change. Now, other organizations that are really servicing a need just simply reach a certain point, then they just don't go any further, or they just reach a certain place in the area that they've gotten to, and then they just don't go any further. Even if the aspiration is there, they just don't, because they haven't structured themselves and then don't have ways to do the things that need to be done that allow them to scale and grow and really continue to fulfill real needs. Because sometimes the needs change. They do change. People don't any longer need a tape. They just don't. So you could still have your store full of tapes, but nobody's going to come and visit it. You can say, this is the best tape store in the world. Nice. But are you fulfilling a real need? So, I mean, and when it gets to social organizations, it's a little bit harder to make that judgment. But again, the reality is still we need to have ways to assess whether we're really fulfilling real needs, or if it's an imagined need, or if it's a need that we've squeezed into a box that isn't relevant anymore. It's there, and enough people still buy into that, but maybe it's not what is really needed in the 21st century. In the age of COVID and heavens only knows what else. Yeah. Any other questions? If there's no other questions with the homework, then I just want to throw one thing out there, and I might let you know that the 3-day intensive that's coming up, and it starts on the 24th, it's the 25th, so it's a Thursday, Friday, and a Saturday. I know that's a good chunk of your life, but I want to say that it's going to be, because of the way it'll be less structured like these classes. There'll be segments of it, and then there'll be some get in there and do stuff together, and then there'll be some put pen to paper times and things like that. So that's going to be really an implementation part of this. But I did want to make sure that 3 days ideally is founded ideally you have some experience with doing the assessments, the stakeholder assessments, because that gives you a good grounding in that, and it gives it adds to the levels of engagement that can be had during that time. But it's also a time when you can invite some of your peers or some of your team members, if you would like them to be part of this as well and to have some sense of what it is that you're doing. And so I'm going to open it up later on this week to including other people. And it's going to be more than reasonably priced. And I'm just going to make it more like about $47 for people to sign up for the 3 days, and $97 if they want to get access to the recordings and stuff like that later on. So what it means is that then it could create an opportunity for you and a couple of others to go through more of this process of understanding some of these systems and then getting some of the, now you of course will know a whole lot more than anybody coming in for the 3 days, because you're going to be building experience on top of experience and knowledge. But some of it we will just go over again, because some of it is, we don't, information is one thing, knowledge and expertise is another, and those stages of competence. I just want to, I guess I'm just going to pull that back up again, because it's just going over this again, the stages of competence. Level one is we have unconscious incompetence. We don't even know what we don't even know. And that may be when we're a kid, it could be on an issue that we don't even know that we didn't have systems in place in our organization that will actually allow us to keep ourselves aligned. We didn't know that we had to have an X factor, or that is a way to make our organization exceptional. You don't have to have an X factor. You don't have to. But if you do, and if you work on it, then that is a key to becoming exceptional as an organization. Then there's level two, conscious incompetence. You become aware that you don't have that. Then you got to begin to work on that. And so then you start to consciously make an effort to get yourself competent. And part of the way that you become competent, so you build this conscious competence, is through repetition. In the end, it's repetition. There's constant awareness, reminder, and we'll get into that. We'll be helping you set up systems to remind yourself beginning next week about key things that you need to be doing. So building systems that remind you, that keep you engaged on key issues, that keep your commitments transparent, so that you can be held accountable for your stated objectives and goals and things like that. So next week's gonna be fun. I think you'll enjoy next week as well. All of this is done through repetition. You don't just read it once and then become an expert. But this is why even the course of going through these classes and then coming into this 3-day intensive is such a boon for you, because then you get a chance to really absorb some of this and really more deeply understand and take this on and take this kind of stuff with you into whatever it is that you do down the road. You as a leader, you may not be in the organization that you're in forever and a day. You may be, and you may take it to your grave, but whatever way, in all aspects of your lives, there are things that you'll be learning in this that you will benefit from for years to come. And then level four is the unconscious competence, where so long as you keep using it in a way, you don't even know that you're good at it anymore. And it just becomes a part of you and how you work and how you operate. And that's the optimal level of competence. Again, part of what I'm working on doing through this process is introducing ideas, getting you some level of dabbling with it, thinking about it, possibly putting it into practice, getting some experience with it, giving some feedback about it, starting to talk with others about it, starting to utilize it. And then next week, I'll be talking about how to build these in some of these things into your systems, into your week-to-week, monthly, quarterly practices, that as a practice, is what will just 10x your impact and influence when you continue to implement. Because as people say, ideas are easy. Execution is everything. Having a bit of information and knowledge is nice, but until you're doing it, until you're utilizing it, until you're adopting it, until you systematize it and build it into your either your own daily habits or into your own organization and system, it's purely that, it's an idea. So the whole, all of this, and including as we work toward the 3-day implementation intensive, is so that some of these core practices that you then give expression to in your own organization, into your own life, into your own thinking, your own mindset, you get sufficient experience with them and comfort levels with them that you can, and success with them, the feeling of success with them. That, have any of you been into the membership area and pushed the button at the bottom? If you did your homework, I want you to remember to do that. Is there
okay? I think I need to remember that I did that last week, so I should. Yeah.
Don't forget to push the button.
Okay.
A little golden button. It says push here or something when you've done your homework. It says something like that.
Right.
I want you to push the button. It's just a simple little thing, but you know, hey. One of the things that's important to do in life is to celebrate. So don't forget to push your button. Grace just pushed the button. Did you see that smile go on your face? You couldn't help but smile. It's just such a funny little thing, right? But it's just, don't forget to celebrate. Never forget to celebrate. Anyway, so, anyway, I'll send you a link this week that if you want to consider getting some of your peers to sign up, then, and if they can make the time and do that, then this is something that even just as individuals, whether they're leaders, whether they're part of your team member, even what this can do is it can help your team members understand some of what it is that you're doing. Now, I know in the end, anything that I provide to you is an option, what you take from it, what you decide to use in your organization, how you'll use it is totally up to you. But it helps to have a baseline of understanding that is common amongst people who are working on projects together. It can just be very useful. Anyway, I look forward to next week when we finally get into our, what some people call OKRs, what are our transparent, you know, adaptive and agile goals, whatever we want to call it, it almost doesn't matter. The key thing is that we put an implementation process system into our own organization, and it just gives us a way, you know, that we as inspirational souls are likely to lose track of if we don't keep ourselves and our feet to the fire, if we don't provide a little accountability to ourselves. Human beings operate a little bit better with accountability, and this system helps us all. So I'm excited for next week. Any other questions other than that, where, you know, we're pretty close to our full 2 hours again. I seem to go, forget the 90 minutes. Let's just go with 2 hours. Any other questions? Shoot me an email if you've got any questions. I hope that James is able to, you know, I think he's able to hear the audio. It's a little bit easier for him. He follows up with the audio. But I know that in some ways, the very first section on responsibility 2, responsibility 4, I think is very much something that James will benefit from hearing. He has such a, he sees so many dire issues where he is, and it's very hard for him to not stretch himself too thin. And so, but the interesting thing of, for this little group might be, and there could be some good connections here, Grace, with, I don't know whether you've got people in Nigeria, but if Anya is doing stuff in, it just so happened, we've got three Nigerians here. We've got, James is in Nigeria, Funmi is in Lagos. If Anya is in dealing with Nigeria. So right here, we've got, you know, the grounds for a really powerful little group to operate. And I'm sure you've got connections in Nigeria, Grace, that probably would be good to, you know, even connect with the others, even if it's just for networking purposes. Don't have to necessarily work together, but just to know of one another and to understand what you're doing so that down the road, when situations arise, there are the potential for resources. It's so important for social entrepreneurs to build social capital and to utilize that as a resource. And that comes through networking, relationships, partnerships, working together, supporting one another, spending a little time getting to know one another and helping and support one another. Okay, that's about it. With that, I'll say, don't forget to do your homework. As much of your homework as you can. Schedule it. Put it in your schedule. Until it's scheduled, it's just a nice idea. Don't forget to stick in at some time that you will do this work. You know, give yourself some thinking time, because this, as you work on your business, as you work on yourself, as you work on what you're doing, this is what powers and empowers your organization. As you plan and put in place the things that you know can help you strengthen your organization, this is investment in you and your organization, and therefore in your impact and influence in all that you do. So invest in yourself, schedule time. Thank you very much, and I look forward to seeing you all next week. Bye-bye.